Welcome to the podcast, From Crisis to Connection. I'm Jeff Stewart, licensed marriage and family therapist, and I'll be bringing the professional perspective.
I'm Jody Stewart, unlicensed wife, mother, daughter, sister, friend, and neighbor, and I'll be bringing the regular, everyday perspective.
We are all about relationship recovery, and we'll tackle tough topics like infidelity, abuse, addiction, pornography, and betrayal trauma.
We also focus on helping you build stronger connections in your most important relationships. So thanks for joining us. We're glad you're here.
Communication in marriage or in a committed relationship isn't always easy, especially in the aftermath of betrayal. So today we've invited fellow therapist Nathaniel Gustafson to teach us more about four levels of communication and how to improve your ability to build a stronger connection, especially in the face of betrayal. So in this episode, we actually make a special emphasis on how this can help men. Men are often socialized to avoid anything emotional, and they struggle to deepen their ability to connect with their partner. And Nathaniel and I in our therapy practices tend to work mostly with men who are betraying their partner. And so this episode is going to lean more toward talking with men and helping men learn how to deepen their emotional connection. Before we dive into this topic today, we do want to let you know about a free resource. You can find the link in the show notes. If you struggle with betrayal in your relationship, whether you're the one that's been betrayed or you're the one that broke trust, you can find help and resources in this free video course. This is something I put together to help couples learn how to navigate these early days and weeks that can be so difficult. And honestly, if you've been in the process a long time, it's good to review to make sure you've been thorough in your attempts to try and rebuild and even heal from broken trust. So click on the link in the show notes and I'll send it to you right away. So let me introduce you to our guest on the podcast today. Nathaniel Gustafson is a licensed professional counselor and holds a master's in arts and counseling and also a master's of divinity and has training in emotionally focused therapy and EMDR. And he's the founder of Tenderhearted Men. We're so grateful to have Nathaniel here on the podcast today. Let's jump right into our interview with Nathaniel Gustafson.
Well, welcome, Nathaniel. So great to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So awesome. You do a lot of work with men who struggle to really communicate and connect with their wives, especially in the context of rebuilding trust.
Yeah, and men and couples. I focused a lot on couples as well.
Yeah, good. Okay. Yeah, that's great. So a lot of what we're going to talk about today is really a couples topic around communication. And, you know, I ran into your work when you had shared something about the four levels of communication that you see, these different layers that go deeper, and use the analogy of a swimming pool, which I love, of, you know, recognizing that, you know, some people aren't ready to totally even dip their toe in the water, and some people are need to really be in the deep end of the pool. So let's just dive right into it. I want to, you know, not make this cryptic at all. We want our listeners to really understand these different four levels. So how would you like to present it? Do you want to just go through and review them all, just introduce them all first, and then we'll dive into each one, or what makes the most sense?
I think that makes the most sense. Yeah.
Okay.
So at the top is the most easily accessible level is going to be what I call the behavior or the data. Like if you had a camera in the room, the objective facts, this is what we see going on. And couples can talk about that very, very easily. So we have the behavior data. Below that are our thoughts about what just happened.
Mm.
So behavior data, thoughts, then deeper than that is going to be the emotions that that event evoke in us. And then even deeper than that is what I call the why level. And in my office, that why level is often a core wound or a need, kind of what motivates us. It's not always the core wound or need. It can be a dream, a desire, an ambition, a value. But it's kind of the deepest part of our identity and the most compelling thing about us.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. I like that breakdown.
Yeah. I love that sequence. It just, you know, it makes a lot of sense. It's very intuitive.
Yeah. And what I tend to see happen is there's an invisible line between the thoughts and the emotions. And most all people like staying in the shallow end, if you will. They like staying in with what happened and our thoughts about what happened. Because the deeper we go, the more vulnerable, the more intimate it is. And so there's more risk down there.
So that's really the tipping point, you feel like, is that, you know, when we're starting to get out of just thoughts, because that's so safe just to talk about our thoughts and, you know, especially other people's thoughts, right? You can even distance yourself even more and talk about, you know, just observations and things like that and keep it super superficial, safe. And so when you talk about that invisible line, do you feel like people bump up against that and kind of sense that like they're on that line and then they just sort of naturally pull back from it?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, think about it this way. If somebody disagrees with your idea, we can agree to disagree. If somebody disagrees with your emotion, your experienced emotion, that's more like, wait a minute, I lived this and you can't tell me what to feel, right? How many times have we heard couples like saying that argument, you can't tell me what to feel. Mm-hmm. And that's that line of differentiation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is crossing over that line an issue of ability or capacity or skill, or is it more along the lines of just courage?
All of the above.
Okay.
And so that's one of the things in my office that we go over. There's the cultural beliefs, like real men don't cry, real men don't have emotions, that type of thing. And so there's family of origin stuff that play into that. Well, my family never fought. I never saw how that worked. We never talked about emotions. So there's that. And then there's your personal bias. I mean, there are men in my office who are like, I don't do emotions. And then we have to have a different conversation saying, no, all humans do emotions. It's just you haven't learned how to access those emotions yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I agree. I think it's something that I know for me, it's something, a skill I've had to learn. I didn't grow up with a lot of practice with that. We are definitely more of a behavior, data, thoughts type family. That's the environment I grew up in. And so we really didn't get into a lot of emotional stuff. And I mean, I probably was probably the most emotive of all of my family members. And I don't know that people knew what to do with me.
Yeah. So like I realize that in it, I mean, this question probably applies to couples, to other relationships, but when you're in a system that pretty much operates at the lower two levels or lower, I mean, just the first two really, then you risk, if you're going to like dive deeper, you risk not being able to communicate or connect with the people.
Right.
If you launch into another level.
Well said. And Jeff, like, I'm really curious about what you just said. I was probably the most emotional in my family of origin. So like, what was that like for you when you had that, when you had more inclination toward that, and yet your system didn't affirm, respond, draw you out? Like, what was that like for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, just as I'm thinking about that right now, I think that it was easy for me to feel alone, to feel misunderstood, to feel maybe to self-reference a ton, like maybe, you know, self-doubt.
Yeah, like something was wrong with you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think it created a lot of shame. And so I would often second guess or use humor as a way to like diffuse stuff or try and just, you know, well, let's just take it back. You know, let's just, I had lots of exits.
and that's the adaptive behavior that you need to do to survive in that system. Yeah. But notice each of the things that you said were things that were both along the line. I felt lonely. I felt isolated. You needed somebody to go with you and say, it's okay to have those emotions.
Yeah.
And so the phrase I often give with a guy in my office who has learned to not feel what he feels is, you don't have to teach a five-year-old to seek consolation when he falls off his bike. He runs into his mom's arm and wants her. You don't have to teach a six-year-old to get excited and want everybody to join him to blow out the birthday candles. We are naturally predisposed, made to emote and share our emotions with others. Mm-hmm. It's not till we're in junior high when we're too cool for school to, you know, blow out our birthday candles, like, and whatever, it's no big deal. It's not till we're in the high school game that you rub some dirt in that injury, get back in the big game, like real men don't cry. We learn to suppress emotions, which should be a huge, like, aha, and a huge relief for guys. Because if we've learned not to feel or not to express our emotions to others, we can unlearn that and get back to our natural state that says, oh, I want to share these emotions. And I want to share them with the people that matter most, my wife.
Yeah, it reminds me of John Bradshaw's book, Homecoming. You know, just that idea that really it's just coming back home to what our natural state is, that we're we are all emotive, especially boys and men. I mean, I don't know if I read this or if it was just some old kind of myth that boys cry more than little girls, little baby boys. Is that true?
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. Have you heard that, Jody?
No.
Yeah. I don't know. I I'd read that somewhere and I've never really looked further with that, but I thought, huh, I mean, even if they cried the same amount, that would still be probably a revolutionary idea for a lot of men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I mean, to not to hammer this point too much, but like, I live in Colorado. We got cowboys out here. And cowboys, the myth of the cowboy is, you know, he's the Marlboro man, the rock, the island, all that kind of stuff. Country music would not exist if it were not for masculine emotions.
So true.
Oh man, that's so true. I was listening to some on the way home with my daughter. She and her friends are all into this. And I'm listening to it going, man, this guy's really feeling it. That's so funny.
You cannot listen to Butterfly Kisses and not go, dude, that guy's in touch with his emotions.
Yeah, I love it.
That's hilarious. Even some of the old country, you know, some of the old country, those George Strait out, man, those guys are feeling it. That's funny. I love that. Yeah. So this idea then that, yes, like we might have family systems that really support, you know, probably for most of us, probably support the first two levels. It's probably more rare to have a solid, secure system that really walks people in and invites them and holds them in those two other layers, right? It's probably something we learn as adults or something we probably have to just intentionally walk into.
Yeah. And the thing is that if we go to gender stereotypes, for gals, that's more their world. They're more comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And for guys, we have to learn it. Mm-hmm. And so in my office, there's a tension when the gal's like, why can't you just do this? It comes naturally. It comes naturally for her. There's an uphill battle for him to climb. And the thing he's dealing with is risk. It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary to do it wrong, particularly after betrayal. Like there's so much on the line in those hard conversations, and he's just petrified that he's going to do it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add her wounding and her anger, and it's a super spicy cocktail to try to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he can't just dip a toe in that deep end.
And have her
and
feel
it's
like
tumultuous
she's
water. Yeah. Yeah. So he's already doesn't know how to swim there, but
she sees the white caps.
Circles around him. Yeah.
Yeah. And so with my guys, I encourage them to fail in the right way, meaning the wrong way is to cloister down, to self-protect, to go quiet. And oftentimes if he goes quiet when they go to emotions and she needs him to show up at that emotional or even that core wound level, and he's not able to, he goes quiet, she feels abandoned. And that's just terrible. And so he needs to try to say something, even if it's awkward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I mean, I guess flipping around what you just said, you know, it's like maybe his perception is that he's succeeding, but in the wrong way. Right.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Quiet, I love the positive frame on that. Yes.
Right. He's like, well, I want to succeed. And this is what makes sense to me. That's the reflex, is just to like not make things worse, get quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I don't want to stir things up, but I love the permission to fail in the right way. And it's in the messiness. It's in the attempting. It's the trying. And I find that a lot of women that I work with, they're willing to tolerate that. That's actually soothing to them to see some sort of interaction. It's like anything is better than nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I'll ask guys to, you know, play your hand face up. Let her know what you're trying to do. Literally name it. Like, honey, I'm trying to go to the emotional level. We all know I'm not good at that, but here's my effort.
Yeah.
And when you name it, when you show your hand, play your hand face up, wives are very tolerant because they see the effort.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
So if we can go back to levels of communication, I just want to reinforce how powerful this tool can be for y'all. So think back to the beginning. If you've forgotten at this point, the uppermost level is the behavior data, what's going on, below that thoughts, below that emotions, below that the why or the core wound or need. If we ask strategic questions to our partner, we can practice going down levels. What would it take to observe something and say, like, honey, what are your thoughts about that? Hmm. Okay, now I understand what your thoughts are. And then if you practice, fellas, if you practice, okay, what's the question that could get me from thoughts down to emotions? I mean, as easy as, well, what are your feelings about that? What does that stir in you? And then what's a question that we can ask that goes from emotions down to that deepest level? And maybe it's, you know, what does that stir from your childhood? What is close to your heart about that? Mm-hmm. You know, those are some of the things that we can do to practice setting ourselves up for success in those types of conversations. And many of the clients that I work with expect to go in a game time situation, having not put the time in the practice field. And so they just they hope they're able to hit the ball out of the park when they step in the batter's box, but they've never swung at the bat before. Mm-hmm. And so we need to slow everything down, practice skills like going to different levels of communication. And then for yourself, many times, a gal doesn't want to be drawn out, particularly early in betrayal. Like, that's vulnerable. Like, don't try to pull out my heart. And so instead of him asking those strategic questions, what I encourage him to do is you offer for your heart first. You go first in exposing your heart. Her heart's already wounded enough. And so, sir, you need to go first, open your heart to her, share your emotions, share your deepest levels of what you're learning about yourself, where it goes for you. And then kind of say, hey, the water's great. Would you join me here?
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really, really like strategic, but it's really wise, and I'll bet it's effective.
Yeah. And fair.
Sure.
Right. I love the validation there that, you know, she's already, her heart's already out of her chest. Mm-hmm. It's there, you know. And, you know, in terms of practicing and, you know, taking some practice swings, I mean, even right now with what you're saying, you know, for those guys that are listening right now, I would even just ask you, like, notice what happened inside of you the second that Nathaniel went from, what are your thoughts about that, to how do you feel about that? I felt a shift in my body.
You did.
Uh-huh.
Well, I could see a shift happening. Like, I'm not experiencing it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that seems like that.
Yeah.
Just that alone could dial
just
up a lot of angst.
That invisible line, just mm-hmm. as a man. Like, I mean, and I work in this world of emotions, but I just could feel that crossing into that line of like, oh, what do you think about that? Which, you know, most of us could do all day long. We live in a world of thoughts, but that, how do you feel about it? And then I would even say, like, notice what came up for you. And then you can even practice sharing what that was like for you to hear Nathaniel invite you into considering emotions as your first practice. Share that with your partner.
Love it. Yeah.
What was that like for you to hear him ask, how does that make you feel? And that now you're starting to talk about emotions. Now you're starting to talk about something more than just, what do I think about that? It's like, what happened to me? What shifted in me? Man, my chest got tight. That felt really strange. I felt scared that I can't do it, or that I'm going to fail at it, or it's not going to be enough, or whatever. I mean, just we start to get into that place. And now you're over the line into this third area, which is really a gateway further into some deeper healing.
And Jeff, I love how you just explained that, because emotions start in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever we don't have access to emotions, you do exactly what you did. What did you just feel inside of you? Our language shows this off, right? If you have butterflies in your stomach, you have a weight on your shoulder, a pit in your belly, you know, joy in your heart. Each of those are emotions that originate in our body, and then we language them with our brain.
Oh, yeah.
And so when we as counselors talk about processing emotions, it's moving from a body-based into the amygdala, out into the cortex region, and then being able to language it. Like, mm-hmm. That's processing emotions.
Beautiful. Yeah. So if you don't have the words, your body is giving you something to work with.
Totally. So I got to tell this story. One time, Tam and I were like locked in a marathon fight. You know, it's probably 3 hours long, 1 o'clock in the morning, and we were stalemated. And I knew, and it was my turn to talk. So I'm panicked. And I knew, like, it's my turn to talk. I don't want to say the wrong thing. We're stalemated. I don't know what to say. And so I did what I coach my clients to do, like, what's going on in your body? And so I said, Tammy, I don't know what else to say. I know it's my turn to talk. I know I have to say something. And so, like, all I know is every fiber, every cell of my body wants to get up and leave and run away. And I know if I do that, you're going to feel abandoned and hurt. So I can't do that. And I know if I stay here, we're just going to keep saying the same things. And then it hit me, like, I'm scared we're going to be here forever.
Mm-hmm.
And notice, like, what I wish I could say I knew what I was doing. I didn't. I fumbled there. But I started with that sensation in my body. Then I was able to articulate, I'm really scared.
Mm-hmm.
And so what she was seeing from me, that fear looked very similar physiologically as anger does.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was reading me as being angry at her. And I was actually scared that I was going to lose her.
Yeah.
And so just me naming that was enough for her to shift. To go and actually have some compassion on me to go, okay, he's not fighting with me. He's actually really scared. Now, I wish we could, you know, have the Disney dream and we kissed and made up. That I think I slept on the couch that night. Don't get me wrong. But at least we didn't stay in stalemate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. That's a great.
Yeah.
That's a great example of what you can do when you don't know what else to do.
Say something.
Yeah. Say something. Yeah.
I've been thinking about what are people to do when they want to build these skills, and they might need to build these skills in a marriage that doesn't usually cross the line. I mean, even though in general, women tend to be more in touch with emotions, the culture supports that, but that's not always the case. Not all women are comfortable talking about feelings or living in that area or deeper. And most of the time, friendships don't necessarily have that quality. And so that's a big gap to bridge, to start to move into an area and develop a skill set that will likely become a part of somebody and who they are. And then they're going to be very possibly left with others who can't or won't take some of those next steps with them.
Yeah, it's such a good point. I wish I had a magic wand that could change the culture. I don't. Most quality friendships are made, they're not found, right? And so if our audience has a bunch of buddies that get together and watch the Broncos, you know, every Sunday, and that's their group of friends, and they just sit around and watch football and eat wings, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty incomplete life. And so what we need to do is like be vulnerable, be honest, to say like, I want more out of life. I like watching football. And I'm beginning to realize there's this whole other part of me. And you can have that conversation with guys. And because we're all humans, because we all have emotions, guys that are quality are going to get it and say, you know, I'm there too. I want more too. And here you are, you're leading the way to something new in your relationship. It's okay to name it. It's okay to express your desire, your hopes for your relationship. Super vulnerable, don't get me wrong. And if a guy doesn't want to go there, they'll self-select out. And you'll know who's worth pursuing at a deeper level. And I tell you what, those relationships of other safe guys are incredibly important for the recovery process. Because in my economy, that's the practice field. There's less at stake when you open your heart to those guys than if you open your heart to your wife. And so you practice with them to get really good at it so that when you're in game time situation with your wife, you're ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a bit, like you said, that's a bit dicey because they might try it out and a few people might not respond well. You've had that happen.
Yeah.
Some people just don't have the bandwidth, the depth that.
Yeah, I remember going to lunch with a few guys and sticking my neck out and talking about some personal struggles and just wanting to build some community. And it was awful. But, and it still stings even thinking about it today. I'm just kind of like, it didn't go well. But I have a great group of people in my life. You know, I found other men. I just kept with it.
Yeah. And I, Jeff, have had the same experience. Early on, it's like I had to take what I could get. Not all of even my old friends were able to give me what I needed.
Yeah.
But now that I've been living here, you know, not only engaging emotions, but championing emotions, wanting that and just delighting in it, it's kind of one of those, your people start finding you. There's an attraction to that depth that other people want, and they start gravitating toward that.
And I think that for men, especially if you really perhaps, you know, again, you know, with your wife, it might feel like the highest stakes to attempt, you know, some of this, like you said, that's kind of game time, if you will, you know, but sometimes even just the guys in your natural social network, it might feel really risky to open up to somebody and risk losing something that's maybe working at an okay level. And so I, you know, I'll encourage guys a lot of the times in my practice to go where other men are already doing this, you know, where they've self-selected. So sometimes, I mean, 12-step groups are fine to a degree. There's limitations there because they don't encourage cross-talking or sharing. So oftentimes those conversations happen in the parking lot, but there are men share groups, you know, there's organizations like Everyman and the Connor Beaton's Man Talks, the Alliance. There's several different groups that have men's accountability groups or men's share groups where they just could get together and just be real with each other. And I've joined several of those over the years and been to retreats, and you know, you don't have to take that huge initial leap of, you know, are these guys wanting to operate below the thought level? It's happening. It's built into the culture, and you can succeed there.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Yeah.
Well said. Okay. So back to our tool. I'm sorry if I'm leading.
Thanks for keeping us on track. Nope.
Yeah. Right.
Levels of communication, behavior data, thoughts, emotion, core wound, or need. I want us to think through this one more time in the context of a good apology. Okay. So a lot of times guys are, and again, I'll have the guy as the one who has wounded in some way, and the gal was the one who's received the wound. A guy will be good at apologizing for his behavior. I did that thing and I'm sorry about that. And after the fifth time, what does she say? I don't want to hear you're sorry anymore.
Mm. So true.
And so then he's like, what am I supposed to do? You don't want me to say sorry. So I guess I won't say anything. And oh man, we got stuff to work with. So fellas, if that's you, if you've ever found yourself in that boat of going, I'm going to catch 22. She's mad at me and yet I can't apologize. I want you to think through the levels of communication with reference to apology. There's what you did, and then there's the impact of what you did. So fellas, a lot of guys are good at owning the fact they threw the rock, but they're not good at owning the ripple effects of that rock in the water, right? We want to own all of it, not just that I threw the rock, but all the impact in her soul.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think through, okay, I did this thing to you. What are your thoughts about it? What did it do to your brain? Does it send your mind spinning? Then emotionally, do you feel sad and wounded and alone? Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. I put you at a place again where you feel sad, wounded, and alone and scared. But then at that deepest level, I can see how this thing goes to the place for you where you feel unprotected. Oh, no. After my betrayal and now this, I can see why, boy, that betrayal trauma comes in at this moment, even if it was only this thing. So you get the flavor of a good apology, mm-hmm. goes all of those levels, takes responsibility and ownership of each of those levels, and offers an apology at that as well. And then when guys get good at that, that's when the apology comes back online for her. She's like, I don't want to hear you're sorry, but I do want to hear how you have empathized with me to see where it impacts me.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a deeper level of witnessing what she's been through. Which is protective on the one hand, because it can be, on the one hand, a deterrent, right? If he really sees the impact it's had, it's less likely he'll go there again.
Well said.
But it also, I think, you know, softens his heart. It certainly can open up her heart. And she would have to open up her heart to even share this stuff. Now, that doesn't mean she necessarily, like, you know, reconnects with him right away or things change in the relationship. But she reveals part of herself and takes that risk to share what this was like for her. And it starts to thread together something that would never happen if he was just owning, you know, just let's stop talking about the behavior. I said, I'm sorry for the behavior, you know? And that's often what I see is that they get fixated on what else can I say? And I love what you're saying. You're like, oh, there's actually several layers of what else you can say.
Yeah.
And it's not a mystery.
Yeah. So to that point, I recently wrote an article and one of the catch lines in it was, is that issue dead or is it in bed?
Yes.
So his idea is like, it's dead. We talked about it. I said, I'm sorry. Let's let the past be the past. And his perspective needs to be, no, we just put it in bed for a while. And my expectation is when I put stuff to bed, it's going to wake up and we're going to need to talk about it again.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. It's just taking a nap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Things will happen. It'll surface. It'll wake up again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so if he postures himself to expect it, then he's not going to have to worry about, oh, we talked about that already. And notice, that for him is that behavior. We talked about that thing. That for her is, I'm still grieving because of that thing. And if he's arguing at a thought or a data level, and she's at an emotional level, there's the discrepancy. There's the miss for one another.
Mm-hmm.
And what we tend to see when we use this metric of levels of communication is because it's more vulnerable down low with the emotions and the core wounds. We tend to guard against it and we'll use language that is thought-based or data-based with the meaning that is down low, expecting our partner to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the example I always give is the toilet seat. He leaves the toilet seat up, she falls in, she's upset, right? And so the fight ensues, they cycle for a while and he finally yells, fine, I'll go to Home Depot, I'll get an automatically closing toilet seat lid. Are you happy now? No. Why? Because it's not about the toilet seat. It's about the fact that she feels unprotected and unsafe. He promised to put it down and he didn't. So it's not about that high level thing. It's about you broke another promise. And until you can see how that relates to, you know, the deepest level relates to the toilet seat, I'm kind of stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And so guys, if you can articulate that and go down those levels and narrate it for her, then that's going to help her get unstuck many of the times.
Right.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I do think it's worth just mentioning that men can do this in a way that men do it. Like when they start stepping into the world of emotions, they don't have to fear that they're going to become women about emotions, right? Because even as we're talking about this and I'm wanting Jeff to spend a little more time there, I still want him to be something that I can lean up against when my emotions are all over the map.
Yes.
So what can you tell us about how men can take those steps and still trust that they're not going to turn into women?
that's probably a whole other podcast to deconstruct what you just said there.
Okay.
Okay. Let me answer in an analogy.
Okay.
You go to the gym and there is somebody who looks like a weakling because he is struggling against the weight and he can barely bench press that thing. And he's just pushing. He looks weak. Now there's another dude who's ripped and he's not lifting anything. And so it's kind of like, well, who's stronger here? The guy who hasn't lifted anything or the one who's struggling?
Mm.
The misconception is, if I don't do emotions, I'm strong.
Mm-hmm.
No, somebody who shows up at the gym and never lifts a weight is not strong. The person who is struggling to lift those emotions is getting stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the context that we need to have, that when our wives need us to be strong for them, it's not an abandonment of emotions. It's helping them lift those emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the more fluent you are with the language and the skill, the more you've developed that, the greater capacity you have to.
Thank you for finishing the thought. Excellent job. Yes, yeah. Yes.
Okay. I love that.
Yeah. And one thing I would say, and this is just from my own lived experience and what I see a lot with people I work with, just probably a very human thing, which is I think a lot of men exit out of this process because something touches one of their core wounds.
Yes.
And it just like flattens them. I felt that before. Like, you know, she'll have a look on her face or she'll use a certain phrase or she'll bring something up or I'll have this core belief that comes up about myself or about what I mean to her or this or that. And it's like, you're just kind of neutralized at that point. And unless you can talk about that and get to that and understand what just happened there, then, you know, you'll either zip back up to behavioral and data or exit the whole thing entirely, or it'll just get sideways. And so I know for myself, a lot of the times you end up deeper in the pool before you're ready for it or before you even know it's happened.
Oh, I love that. You actually didn't slip in and you're like,
Like, I'm not prepared for this, or I didn't know this was happening, or, you know, I didn't get a chance to acclimate or whatever. And so to me, it's sort of like make a note of that. There's probably some work that has to happen there. Let's ease into that or come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just saying like, well, I'm not doing that again, or we're not going to have that conversation again, or blame, or, you know, you made me feel this, or you can react to it, or you can get curious about it and say, okay, because this isn't just about, you know, we go through these things sequentially. Like now I'm in behavior, now I'm in thoughts. Sometimes it's just like,
yeah,
we were talking about behavior and all of a sudden I'm like bleeding out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just what I've heard though.
Oh yeah. That's what they tell you.
Yeah.
Never experienced that one before.
Never.
Okay, so again, I could go about six different places, Jeff, with what you just said. We used to think that strength was static. You know, California's aqueduct system that came crumbling down however many years ago. Buildings used to be staunch. Now they engineer stuff with flex to it. And there's dynamic buildings and dynamic highways that actually move, and they're stronger because they move. And so with that guy who's like, hey, I thought we were just in a thought-based conversation and you just switched the rules on me. Well, buddy, the more you can get comfortable with being dynamic to go fluidly through those levels, the easier it's going to be for you to shift gears.
Instead of backing up a bigger concrete truck, right? That's right. Yeah. We need more rebar here. This thing is moving. Yeah. So, yeah, I love that, Nathaniel. Yeah. That's a beautiful analogy of the flex there. I think I remember reading that the San Francisco, the Golden Gate Bridge, they had like some kind of a march across it and it swayed 7 feet on either side.
Whoa.
And still held.
Yeah.
It was engineered to move that much. 7 feet, 14 feet. I mean, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. You think those things are just solid. And I love the idea that,
because
things are going to move in these conversations as you start to venture into there, inside of you, inside of her, inside of the, I mean, everything's going to be moving. And if you can't move with it, it's going to be overwhelming and scary and hard to stay in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we've said enough, or I have said enough, about the joy and the wonder and the fulfillment that comes to those lower levels.
Because
some guys are like, I'm good up here. What more is there to
What's
life?
What's the payoff, right?
Right. And so I'm wondering if you guys can comment on those deeper levels. Like what is compelling about that for you?
Well, I'll speak first as a man. It brings tears to my eyes when you say that. Like I feel deep in my body, like just how much more complete of a person I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I'm not one-dimensional anymore. I'm not just a paycheck. I'm not just this butler who helps around the house or, you know, like I get to just really engage the world and my wife and my children at a much richer level. And so there's more color. It's more interesting. And to me, there's more relaxation and peace because I'm not pushing and battling things out and away. Like I can just let them kind of flow through me. I'm not triggered or anxious about everything, or I'm not like running from the boogeyman all the time. I can just rest. So for me, it's like, it's freedom. It's relief. It opens up more adventure and curiosity, growth. There's just so much about it that I think is rewarding about going into those other levels that I think, you know, a guy would be missing out on. It. To me, it's like watching something in black and white with no sound versus full IMAX surround sound, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just so different, mm-hmm. you know? How about for you, Jode?
I mean, I don't think I can say much more than like your testimonial of that, because that's profound. And people need to know that that's what the next levels look like, even though it's accompanied with some of the fear. But I guess probably for me, it just is a level where I feel like there's life. I feel alive at those levels. And I feel connected at those levels. There's something profound about being seen, having those deep levels being seen and known by somebody. And when you can establish that, when you can get there and be collaborative about things together, then there's just safety and connection and depth. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so good. So good. And there's safety, connection, depth. Counseling-wise, there's what's called co-regulation.
Yeah.
Where you can actually leverage the relationship to help both of you mm-hmm. calm and engage mm-hmm. emotions. And so like there's just a fullness, a richness that's there. One of my favorite sayings is we all want acceptance. Like I think we as humans, the human condition, we're all struggling with whether or not we're important, whether we matter, whether we're lovable, or mm-hmm. whether we're loved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're only able to be accepted as far as we're willing to be known.
Yeah.
That's right.
And so you may be accepted at the highest levels, but the whole of your being, your emotions, your spirit, your drive, your dreams, if you withhold those, there's always going to be a question in the back of your mind like, yeah, you might like what I'm doing, but do you like my heart?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But because there's risk there, I'm not showing it. And I will always have that question mark. Man, fellas, if that's you, I implore you, take some risks there. Mm-hmm. Take some risks there, because you probably have a partner who is willing to go there with you and wants to, longs to say like, I love you at that level too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Awesome. Nathaniel.
Gives me chills.
Thank you.
Good. What a joy to speak with you about this. And I love
this. It's been so much fun.
Yeah. I love how you've organized this, and it's just a great map. And
it's clear.
It's fun. I'm going to talk to our boys about it.
Yeah.
Be fun to talk with our own kids about it, and certainly share it with my clients. I love the way you've organized it, and I love your analogies and just your spirit, just how you're showing up. It's just a real honor
mm-hmm.
to have this conversation.
Thank you. I received that. Thank you. So I'm not sure if you got this email or not, but I do have like a infographic that demonstrates the levels of communication. And I sent you a link if you want to share that with the audience as well.
I will.
Awesome.
They
can,
make sure
they can run over and get something for their fridge and be reminded of some of the stuff there.
Perfect. Yes, this needs to be on the fridge, big time.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, I'll make sure we put that in there. Thank you for that. And but yeah, thanks for the great work you're doing and for making some time for us today.
Likewise, thank you for all that you do for so many different people. Thanks for spending an hour with me and letting me share something I'm passionate about.
We want to thank Nathaniel for joining us on the podcast. So great to have him join us and talk through these really important things around communication. So good. You can learn more about Nathaniel on his website, tenderheartedmen.com. And I also want to remind you about the free course that you can download from us using the link in the show notes, The First Steps to Rebuilding Trust. Great resource to help you learn how to navigate these first weeks, months of betrayal, healing from the impact of betrayal, as well as healing from broken trust. And want to make sure that you get that resource if that could be helpful to you. Thanks so much for joining us every single week. We will catch you in the next episode.